Even the driest basement has been damp this summer, and many Iowa basements are underwater. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, many people around the state, particularly in the Ames, Des Moines, and Colfax areas, are facing daunting cleanup operations in their homes and businesses. Home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here to help us understand the dangers posed when floodwater enters our homes and to answer your cleanup questions. What can you dry out and keep? What has to go? We'll also talk about how to protect yourself from future floods when you're putting the basement back together. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or tweet us at IPRTalk. Call with your questions after this news.
Talk of Iowa coming up next, 10:06. Again, that excessive heat warning for about the southern half of the state. The warning including Ames, Des Moines, Iowa City, Ottumwa, and also Council Bluffs. For the rest of today, mostly sunny, continued hot and humid highs today in the 90s. Sunny skies now over all of the state, no precipitation. Tonight, partly cloudy, thunderstorms likely in northwest Iowa tonight. Chance of storms in central Iowa, lows tonight 70 north to 75 south. It's 86 degrees in Des Moines, 85 in Waterloo.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe, our home improvement expert. Bill McAnally is here today in the studio. Today, he normally joins us on the line from Fort Dodge, but he made the drive over and managed to find roads that are not flooded across the state to get here today. So we would love to hear from you. We know that many people around the state are cleaning up flooded basements, homes, and businesses. So that is where we're going to start today. And you can call with your questions at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, the first thing you have to do when you have a flooded basement is get the water out of the basement. So, Bill, where do you start with that?
Well, first of all, we really have to be careful about electrical issues. When we try to get this water out, we have to make sure that we don't have any extension cords laying down in the water. You know, it's scary to think that people still forget that at the end of that cord, you know, where it's open, they'll throw a cord into the water, or they'll carry it barefoot across the basement and then stand there and plug in. You know, it's just common. You know, you would think it would be common sense, but we really have to watch the electricity when we work with any of these pumps. Make sure that everything is grounded. Make sure that if you're using wet vacs to pull that water out, that's on a grounded and GFI protected receptacle. Now, some pumps generally are not on a ground fault circuit interrupter. They're in a regular receptacle because they would have more of a tendency to shut off when you really need them. So you still have to make sure that there's no electricity there. You want to make sure you get that water out of the basement as fast as you can. But, you know, Iowa has a lot of, say, concrete block foundations in certain parts of Iowa. And when you get so much water around a foundation, it pushes, there's a lot of pressure against it. So in some cases, to save the house, you may want to leave the water in the basement because of the pressure. You know, if you're in a real hurry to pump the water out, well, all the water on the outside, especially if the water's up, to the windows of your basement or there's water everywhere around your foundation, if you pull that water out of that basement real fast, you may have that thing implode.
Wow.
So sometimes it depends. You may have to keep that water in the basement. Excuse me, to keep the pressure up against the foundation. So
just wait for the water to recede in some cases.
Yeah, you may, you know, before you get real rambunctious about it, you may want to ask.
Okay, so when you talk about sump pumps, let's say for people who don't have a lot of water in the basement, not flooded up to the windows, but, you know, there are a lot of people with bone dry basements who may not even have a sump pump who are dealing with water in their basements this year. When you go to buy a sump pump, what do you need to look for?
What you want to look for is a name brand. Boy, excuse me, I must have caught some mold on the way down. Had my head out the window. You want to look for a good quality pump, a name brand pump, something that's going to be, pumping maybe, excuse me, 1,500 gallons or so ratings, a two horse. Maybe look for something. Some of them go up to 15,000 gallons an hour. But look for maybe one that sits down the bottom pump, not the pedestal type. You know, the pedestal ones are the old cheap, you know, for $39. You want to have one that sits down the bottom of the pump, like a sewage type pump, that can pump a lot more water faster, because when we design houses correctly, we have a lot of rock around the foundation. The water comes in underneath the floor, goes to the sump pit, and we have to get that water out of the pit fast so that it doesn't build up and come into the house. So you want to look one for that can pump the most amount of water. Boy, excuse me. The most amount of water. But yet, make sure that you have a back check valve on that sump pump, because as you pump the water out, half the time, the way you've seen systems before, it'll go out, and half of it comes back, goes right back in the pit. It's just on, off, on, off. So you want to make sure and have a back check valve and put it right there at the pump so that that water goes out, and then it doesn't come back and fill the pit back up.
It stays out.
Right.
Jay is on the line from Colfax. Hello, Jay.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi. How much water do you have?
Well, I live in Colfax, and my problem was my sump pump went underwater, and I had to kill the power to it, so I got about 6 feet of water in my basement.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I live right at the west edge of Colfax, and I got a backyard full of water. I did finally find another small pump, so I'm making some progress, but my big concern is I've got a dirt floor basement, so, you know, it's groundwater coming up through it, but what kind of problems is that going to cause me inside the house, if any?
Well, if it's a dirt floor, you know, it's going to take probably a long time for that water to go down. You know, you're in the case too where if it's a dirt floor, you may not have a whole lot of structural backing to hold the bottom of that foundation wall from coming in if you pull all that water out right away.
Yeah.
So that's the bad thing. Long term, I would cover that with plastic and then pour concrete over the top of that.
But in the short term, Jay's going to have a lake down there.
He's going to have a lake, and you know what? In that kind of a situation, he's almost the case where I would say leave the water there till it starts to go down, because if there's nothing holding the bottom of those foundation walls like your concrete floor does. I mean, I've seen that soil just take it, just push those walls in, and your house falls right into the hole. You guys are really in bad shape, I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, what should Jay worry about if that water's sitting down there in his basement? Are there mold issues?
There's going to be mold issues. I'm sure everybody in Colfax got a hold of their insurance people. Everybody that's in your situation, you know, I think to do some good research, go to Iowa State Extension. Iowa State Extension, I always just type in Iowa State Extension, disaster recovery, and then floods. And on their website, they have a tremendous amount of information there, cleanup, safety issues, especially in your case, what you may want to do. There's a 21-page manual on flood cleanup. But in your case, of course, you can't live in the house. I'd stay away from it until that water starts going down, because if you pump, that water is just going to keep coming in and coming in, and you're just in that bad situation with that much water, especially with the soil floor.
So he really needs to get out of there.
I would, yeah. There's no reason to be there. You know, everything that's in the basement, you know, is hopefully, well, I suppose your furnace, water heater, and everything's down in the basement. And
yeah, I'm just basically trying to keep ahead of it so it doesn't get up into the house itself. So
yeah, that's you can keep doing that. But there again, that water is just going to keep coming up. But at least, run the pump so you can at least keep it below the wood. If you can keep it 12 to 18 inches below the wood, that's really going to help.
Okay.
So, because if it gets any closer, then that moisture really starts soaking into the wood. But if you can, if there's windows, usually the top two courses of a foundation will have, some windows around. Open those up, get some circulation going. You're in a worst-case scenario.
All right.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for the info.
Yeah, sorry.
Thanks a lot, Jay. Good luck.
Thank you. Bye.
You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. Do people need to first figure out what's in that water? Obviously, in some cases, it's river water or it's rainwater, but in some cases, it's sewage.
Oh, and then watching the news and seeing those portable toilets floating around. you know, you don't know what's in that water. You know, I wish everybody would watch the pictures on the news and think, okay, now there's especially pictures, there was horses. You've got all that fecal matter. You've got chemicals. And then you see people walking around and they're up to their waist. First of all, they don't know what's underneath them. If they step on some glass, get cut. You know, it's – you don't know what's in that water and there's nothing good in it. I mean, obviously, they should stay out of it. And they're going to have to be – a lot of these people that are wandering around in there, especially barefoot, if they haven't had a tetanus shot yet, they need to get one. I mean, as soon as they possibly can. If you don't have any business walking back and forth, stay out of it. You know, if you do have to go back and forth, get some chest waders, you know, some hip waders, you know, wear rubber gloves. You know, you just can't stress that enough because I live in the Des Moines River Valley, and you have in the past too. When you get this water that comes up, it's not this clear, pristine things from the old Hams beer commercials. It's – You can't see more than an inch down in it, and it's just full of everything you can imagine. And none of it is good to get into a cut or an open wound. It just amazes me people want to walk through that stuff.
Sharon is on the line in Des Moines. Hello, Sharon.
Hi.
So do you have a lot of water in your house?
No, we've only had it once
so far. Good.
My question is, I cannot carry the wet vac up the stairs.
Sure.
So I was sold a small, like, sump pump.
Okay.
And I hooked my garden hose to it.
Okay.
And they told me I could just stick that inside my wet vac and pump it out. Is that okay?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good idea. Sure.
Okay.
Sure, but just make sure that, you know, that what I like to see is when they – with the cords is, you know, tie them up to the floor joists or something so they're not laying on the floor.
Okay.
So there's no chance of anybody stepping on them.
Okay.
You know, keep the cord completely out of the way. Yeah, that's a pretty clever little option because it's going to pump it as fast as you're going to bring it in with a wet vac.
Okay. I was just making sure before I did this.
Now they do sell sump pumps are zero, basically zero clearance. They sit flat on the floor, and they'll take that floor down to just about dry.
Okay.
So, you know, some of them, you know, you have to have, say, a foot or so for it to activate, but they do have these other ones that sit right on the floor, and that might be a one for you to use.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Goodbye.
All right. Thanks a lot, Sharon. That might save you some back-breaking work with the wet vac there.
You can always get your neighborhood kids carried out with 5-gallon buckets. That would be the best thing. Give them something to do.
Quarter a bucket.
On a hot day.
Joe is on the line in Britt. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Hi.
Morning.
I'm calling from the Hobo Convention at Britt, Iowa.
Well, good. I've got my wife's relatives are up there. They're not the hobos. I don't think they are, but we've got some relatives up there celebrating, I think.
All right. It's hot weather.
You bet.
It's supposed to be cooler this weekend, but I wanted to say how that people can easily and economically reinforce those basement walls so they don't cave in.
Okay.
What's your idea?
Okay. You just lay a two by fours flat on the floor and then run one up on each end up the wall and then put one about a 5-footer at a 45-degree angle between the one on the floor and the one against the wall.
Okay, so you're creating a brace. Joe, we will talk more about that idea in a minute after we get back from our break. Thank you so much for your call, and have fun at the Hobo Convention.
Yep.
You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I am not. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here with our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, and we are talking about wet basements and, unfortunately, wet first floors and all kinds of flood cleanup today. So if you have some questions, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. And just before we left, we had a caller suggest a way to brace the basement walls to protect them with all this pressure on the outside. Does that work?
Yeah, that works. What he was talking about was running a 2x4 along the floor. That holds the top of the wall. He was talking about running one on the floor, one up the wall, and then running a 45-degree angle, like a 5 or 6 foot or something like that, maybe even longer. But in the case like our first caller, the one that had a soil basement, you almost have to do his opposite, is you would run a brace from the bottom of that foundation wall and run a brace up to the floor. Now, the scary part of that is, I mean, that this is where you want to get somebody involved that understands structural, is there's that much pressure that if you put a lot of braces in, the amount of pressure on the bottom of that wall could push and then lift your floor up. And especially if you have a floor that's joined in the center, you could pop that up. I had a friend that something like that happened, that the whole floor buckled up and it took the whole roof off. So, you know, the braces he was talking about, that'll help hold the top of the wall, and that's correct. You'd want to put quite a few braces in. And the key to that, though, is that bottom board. I would probably use larger lumber than 2x4s, but that bottom plate that's sitting on the floor should go continuous from one foundation wall all the way across the basement to the other. That will also help those walls from popping in. It'll kind of take somewhat of the place of the floor. That gets really tricky. And the downside of that is, you know, in some cases, I don't think I'd send anybody even down in that basement. I'd be more worried about the safety side of it. The basement of the house isn't worth somebody getting killed under that situation. So if it looks scary whatsoever, stay out of there. That's why you have insurance.
Jared sent us an email from Dubuque. He says, I have a cinder block basement which leaks around the footing where the bottom block meets the basement floor. The previous owners used dry lock throughout the basement. I've already placed drain tiling on one of the walls that was leaking the worst of all. After all the rain that we've had through the summer, it seems as if the front wall is leaking worse than normal, as well as the side wall, the one with the drain tiling, started leaking a little. I have a couple of questions. First, I am having a company that specializes in fixing leaking basements come and give me an estimate to fix the problems for good. What are some of the things that I should look for in a basement specialist company prior to hiring them?
First thing I do is I would see if they're licensed with the state of Iowa, if they're bonded, they have insurance. I would ask for the paperwork. They'll say, yeah, we're insured, we're bonded. Well, okay, give me a copy of it. Ask for references. I would check out the references, make sure they're not just, you know, relatives and friends. There's check and see if maybe it's a national group. There's a lot of national brand waterproofing and basement companies that are out there. I would really, really do my research on it. Don't give any cash up front. Find out what their payment schedule is, and then find out, okay, if you start this job, are you going to be here till the very end, and what are your guarantees? What we don't want to see happen is people come in, you give them $500, and you never see them again. And the bad thing is there's always people that take advantage of these situations, flooding and mold, anything else. They come in and say they're an expert in all this, and then they take your money. So I would really check references. And if you don't feel comfortable with that person, you know, trust your gut. It's amazing how we kind of forget that nowadays, I think. If you don't feel comfortable with that person, then move to another one.
Right, you don't want them in your home.
No, you don't want them in your house. And I do like to have people do a background check on these companies because you don't know who they hire. You really don't.
Jared had a second question, and you covered this a little bit, but what are some of the methods they may use and which method works the best from keeping the water out of the basement? And is there something I should avoid or look out for when dealing with them?
Well, I would if it's you're just getting a little leakage right now, you're pretty lucky considering the majority of the people in Iowa right now.
Well, he's in Dubuque, so maybe up a little bit
higher
than others.
Yeah, he might be. Yeah, they've got some really fun stuff going on over there. What you really want to find out, you know, they may just come along the bottom of the foundation, poke some holes in that bottom block, and then seal basically a gutter system up against the wall and the floor to carry the water around to a sump pit. They may want to cut the floor out and put a tile in. Now, if they're going to do that, make sure that they, ask them, now, are you going to do the whole thing at once, or are you going to do small sections so that my walls don't, push in at the bottom? And then you want to find out, how long the warranty is going to be on this and what kind of a guarantee against damage and who's responsible for the cleanup. And, don't jump right into one that comes in, say, it's going to cost you $30,000. We're going to dig all the way around the basement. Just hold off and then and get some other opinions. You can take your time. I mean, I know there's a little water dripping in, but get a lot of different opinions, get a lot of different bids.
All right. Lou Ann is on the line from Johnston. Hello, Lou Ann.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My question is how do you determine when you need a new roof?
Well, your roof right now, is it, when you look up at it, is it all curled and...
No, I see no visible damage.
Okay, you don't see any... Okay, how old is it?
10 years.
10 years? If you see no visible damage and there's no leakage, I wouldn't even be worrying about it right now, because most of the if the shingles are put on correctly, you know, they're 20 to 25 year roofs. The only thing I'd be worried about is, you know, wind damage, hail damage, ice dam damage. But if you get a pair of binoculars so you can get a little better look at it, maybe from the ground, or get somebody to, you know, walk up and take a look at it. But I wouldn't be too worried about it at 10 years.
Now, who would you get that would be objective to come and check it?
I would get a building inspector. There are private building inspector firms that work for realtors, and they inspect homes. They're licensed, they're bonded, and they're third party. They have nothing to gain by saying that you either need a new roof or you don't need a new roof.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Luann. And most roofs that are put on today would last 20 years, sometimes 30 years?
Yeah, they should. You know, that it's really funny here in Iowa. You know, we have so much hail that it's very seldom you see a roof actually go to how long it's supposed to be. You know, you can go ahead and put on a 50-year shingle, but it's still only going to last you 15 when the hailstorm comes through. You know, when we were at working at Iowa Central on the residence halls, you know, I think we started off with, like, say, 30, 35 year, and then we said, you know, hey, wait a minute, we're having to replace them because of hail anyway. So we backed off and went down to a 25 year. That's pretty much where everybody's at. It's pretty rare that you don't lose a roof to either storm damage or hail in Iowa in 25 years.
All right. Thanks a lot, Luann. Susan is on the line from outside of Norwalk. Hello, Susan.
Hi, Bill, Susan Webster. Nice to talk to you.
Oh, hi. Nice to talk to you.
Now I've moved into putting a French drain all the way around the perimeter. I got an old farmhouse, 04 square.
Okay.
And I've been raising frogs in the basement.
There's a real market for them.
Yeah, I got to learn how to do those legs. I'm digging it with a little backhoe on a tractor, so I got about a 12 to 16-inch trench, and it's taken a lot of gravel.
Yeah.
Can I use sand or anything else to fill that? And how important is using the fabric soil?
I know it takes a lot of gravel, but I would still stick with good, clean, free-flowing gravel and use the fabric, especially with our soils. I feel bad for you. I know it's expensive, but it's really the only way to do it. Unless once you get away from the house, if you want to change away from a French drain and put in a large, you know, like say an 8 or 12 inch, you know, PVC tile.
Yeah.
From that point, but around the house, I'd still stick with the free flowing rock and the fabric. I know it does get to be a lot of money.
Well, it's not too far from us to run down and get a truckload. We had a cistern cave in right next to the house, and we put almost 30 tons of sand in that.
Yeah, yeah.
I was worried about the foundation going outwards.
You know, and there's a lot of these cisterns. I'm glad you brought that up. That are partially into the basement and partially outside, and we still have water running to them. They haven't capped them off or filled them in, and so then people wonder why I have all this water in my basement. Well, gee whiz, you got, you know, a 1,000-gallon cistern, but they don't know what's there. You know, the younger people move into an older home and they don't know that those cisterns are there.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your call, Susan. Good luck with that.
Hey, thanks, Susan.
Thanks, good to talk to you.
You too.
We're talking home improvement today with Bill McAnally, our home improvement expert, and particularly we're talking about flooding today because a lot of people across the state of Iowa have water in their basements and elsewhere. If you have questions, if you're working on recovery, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. If you're on Twitter, you can tweet us at IPRTalk. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're here today with home improvement expert Bill McAnally. And, of course, we're talking about flooding issues today. So many people across the state are struggling with flooding and the minor inconvenience by comparison of wet basements, which I know is not a minor inconvenience at all. So if you have any questions as you're trying to clean up, give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. And Bill, as people are going through their basements, and I know a lot of people with finished basements are dealing with this, a lot of people who've had dry basements for a long time all of a sudden have water in their basements. Is there anything you can keep when you look through stuff? Do you have to throw everything out, or are there things you can dry out and continue to use?
There are some things that you can dry out. There again, I'd like to mention that Iowa State Extension manual. If you go to Iowa State University Extension Disaster Recovery and then just type in flood, there are some issues in there where they talk about, like food, what do you do with carpet? What about clothes? Photographs. The worst thing you want to do is just immediately throw it away. Like carpet, you can pull it outside, and if you can get it dried in a couple days, it's okay. It just depends on what type of carpet it is, like base molding, like wood base molding. If it's in a drywall, if it's down into the water at all, cut it off to like up to the 4-foot seam or come up a couple feet, because that water is just going to get sucked into the wood. And you may think, okay, I don't see any on the drywall. I don't see any behind the trim. The carpet seems dry. Well, you're only touching the top of it, so you need to get air to that wood framework. You need to get any of the furniture out, get it dried, have a professional person come in and take care and clean that up. There again, like we talked about, well, is it clean water, that's just coming from the soil, or is it, brown water, gray water, whatever? You're going to have to get it cleaned anyway. But that's, I've been in that situation before. I had a sump pump not work that was brand new. Didn't work. I'm not going to say what store I bought it from, but anyway, it didn't work. And all of a sudden, I had 2 feet of water in the basement and went out and got another one, got it down. But I was in the same boat as everybody else. I had to cut the drywall, pull the trim out. And luckily, a lot of the stuff was up. But I had to throw away a lot of books and things, because there's no way I could dry out it didn't seem reasonable to dry out a 1-inch thick manual or something. Like, I just couldn't get it done. I'd pull up that, go to Iowa State Extension, get some information on that. But the thing is, you just want to get those walls opened up, especially if you have paneling. If you have that old wood particle board paneling and it's over drywall, that's like a sponge. And so it might look okay, but if it smells, then you've got mold or mildew down there.
All right. Max is on the line in Windsor Heights. Hello, Max. Max, are you there?
Yeah, are you there?
Yep.
Yes. What's your question?
Oh, okay. Well, I have a basement that's pretty much wet all the time with about an inch or so of water. Somebody suggested that I put the sump pump deeper or possibly put in a second sump pump. Another suggestion was to use, I think it's called Loctite. It's like a paint film that you put on the walls. And I was wondering what you thought of those ideas to start out with before we dig through the cement and put, drainage tiles, which would be very expensive.
Yeah, I would you've got an inch of water over it all the time?
Well, pretty much, yes.
Okay. And is the sump pump running?
The sump pump is running.
Okay.
But the water seems to be coming in more on the other side of the basement, away from the sump pump.
Oh, okay. I had some family members have this exact same thing. It seemed like they always had water, and the sump pump just wasn't, keeping that dry. So we went over to the other side of the basement and put a pump in there, and that pretty much took care of everything. Because how old is the house?
It's 50 years old at least.
Okay, so a lot of times we have in Iowa, is we'll dig down into our basements and we hit clay. Well, especially with a lot of our clays, the water can't go all the way across your basement to get to the other sump pit, especially if it's a 50-year-old house. They may have used the old, 4-inch clay tile block, and they're probably full now anyway. And so that water just can't get there from point A to point B. And you've got a lot of hydraulic pressure if it's coming up and getting into your floor. So I would try to put a pump on the other side, you know, as a worst case right now. But first thing to do, kind of go, you know, diagonal across the house.
Okay.
And that way, if they do come in and do your floor, you know, they're only going to catch half of the perimeter, and then they'll hit a pump, and then they'll do another half of the perimeter, then they hit a pump again.
Okay.
You follow me? I'm drawing it out with my finger on the table here, but.
Sure, I got you there.
Okay.
What about the Loctite, the sealing?
Well, Loctite's okay, but, you know, that Loctite still has to seal to what you paint it to and what you attach it to. And you can try it, at least try it maybe in a small area. But sometimes, you know, it's kind of more of cosmetics. You know, it works in some cases, but if you're having an inch all the time, I don't think I'd trust Loctite. And then the other thing is I'd want to get that water table down lower anyway, get it down below the basement floor.
Okay, what about putting the first sump pump, or just the idea of putting a sump pump lower? What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, that may help. Plus, you know, unplug the sump pump. When it dries up a little bit now, but unplug the sump pump, pull it out, and then clean out all the holes in that pit. You know, take a pencil and poke all the holes because you may not be getting very much water into the holes.
Oh, okay.
They need to be cleaned out about every year or two.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Thank you very much.
You bet. You bet.
Bye. All right, thanks a lot. And Bob is on the line from Boone County. He has a follow-up sump pump question for you. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I have a 20-year-old house, a cinder block foundation. I'm getting water on the inside between the foundation floor and the wall. And the tile from the around the house, we put the plastic tile, you know, when it was built, goes
sure.
out about 400 feet.
Yeah.
We have tree root. You know, I had Roto-Rooter in, clean that out. But I'm still getting water coming in because it's so wet. And I was just wondering if an external sump pump would make sense instead of putting in another internal harm, like you were just talking about.
Yeah, it might in your case. We built a fourplex back in the 70s, and there was so much water in the soil around this fourplex that's what we had to do is we had to put a sump pump outside the walkout. It had a walkout basement. And that's what we had to do is we put that in, and I think the plumber went down about 6 feet. He really wanted to get that water table down. And that's
what go down all the way to the tile. I
mean, yeah.
It was about probably 8 feet down. So,
yeah. Yep. In fact, I'd go a couple feet past that tile.
Okay.
But you're going to have to be out, you know, maybe 3 or 4 feet so that you never know you never know where those guys put that tile.
Yeah. Well, I got pictures of the installation.
Oh, good.
So I know almost exactly where it is.
Oh, good. And you're in good shape.
Okay, probably there's a lot of water, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's another way to do it. Yeah, sorry. Charity told me to say that.
No. All right, Bob, thanks so much for your call, and good luck with that.
Yep.
We've got another call from the Boone area. David's on the line. Hello, David.
Hi, how are you, Bill?
Good.
Question, my wife and I moved 2 years ago into a full masonry home built in Boone in 1948. The full masonry house has also a full masonry two-car garage that's attached by a glass breezeway. My question has to do with these are actual plaster walls in this older home, and it now has central air. We're noticing for the first time in 2 years there is some sort of strange brown drippings going on in the area where you first come from the breezeway into the house, and that you could either step up into the kitchen or go down into the finished basement. The white plaster walls along there, just about a foot from the ceiling, start dripping some sort of light brownish stain that wipes off with a wet rag, but it keeps recurring. And so do you have any thoughts about what is causing that?
Yeah, there's some moisture up above. Is that where the garage attaches to the house? Is there a roof there then?
The breezeway has a roof over it.
Okay, so that butts up against the house then, right?
Yeah, there's a breezeway between the garage and the house, and yeah. It's a glassed-in breezeway.
Yeah, there's some water coming in from up above somewhere.
Okay.
And you know, the good thing about plaster is it lasts a long time and it does dry out. You know, that's the advantage of a plaster.
There is a large vent on that side of the house up the top of the peak up in the attic. Is it possible that the wind has driven water in that way?
It sure could. I'd look above and see if there's any place where flashing or a crack in the. But you know that
what we notice also though is that the water doesn't start at the top of the ceiling. In the house, it's about a foot down from the house, and it's in all areas in that entryway, but nowhere else in the house that's connected to that area.
Yeah, there may be something in there that's causing like a dam, so when that water comes down, stops, and then it starts all over in one place. You know that water, boy, especially if wind hits it, because you know horizontal wind every 10 mile an hour it'll push water up an inch.
Well,
so
what do you think about? I think it has that gray blown insulation up there. If that's all dry, then...
Yeah, if that's dry, you're okay.
We're okay?
Yeah, because that'll suck the water up. You know, it's basically bedding, so...
So since we don't have a vent in the kitchen, is it possible... You don't think it's possible that the temperature differential between the basement and the upstairs is causing moisture to... from the hot air from the breezeway to come in, and it's... just condensating right in there?
Not so much right now, but if it's occurring in the winter, it could be.
Okay, no, it's just occurring this time of year.
Yeah, I doubt it then.
Okay, very good. And then sort of related but to its flooding, but do you have any thoughts about, I think one brand's RectoSeal. It's the sewer backup of valve that you can place in the sewer lines. You have any thoughts about those?
I was listening to a plumber talk about those yesterday, and they're good and bad. If it shuts, well, then you can't use anything in your house. The other thing is there's maintenance to them.
All right, so maybe not the best idea.
Yeah, I would talk with your plumber about those. It's not something I would put in.
All right, well, thank you so much for your call, David.
Yeah, thanks.
And next up we have John in Newton. Hello, John.
Oh, yes. Hello, Bill.
Yes.
Hi. I got a different question from the basement, and I'm just kind of guessing what's happening. This has gone on since this past winter. I have I have a two-story home, and in the hallway of the second story, the ceiling there, the plaster is coming loose, and it's just kind of hanging down. You know where it's from the sheetrock, and so last night I cut it open. And the heating and cooling vent is right there. The water is dripping off of it.
Yeah.
And the ceilings in my second floor, all the vents are in the ceiling for the heating and cooling and not coming through the floor. So my guess is it's going up into the attic, and the hotness in the attic is making condensation come down, follow that vent down and drip through the ceiling there. I've also noticed little brown spots different times in my upstairs ceiling around some of the vents where I'm assuming it's probably condensation there also. I guess I didn't know if I need to put in an attic vent and I haven't gone up there to look in there yet. I've had the house about 4 years, so I've never gone up in the attic. There's a little hole in the ceiling in the closet to crawl through. So I haven't really looked up there yet to see how insulated it is or anything like that.
Well, really, what you know, Iowa's not a place that we ever stick. I mean, sometimes we have to, but the worst place to stick uninsulated ductwork, especially, is in an attic. You nailed it just right. You're getting condensation. That warm air is going up there, or the cool air is going up, hitting the warm air in the attic, and you're getting condensation like crazy. That ductwork should all be insulated. And all the seams on it should be taped with either a mastic, brush on, or mastic tape. Your heating and ventilation person, you know, get a good one that comes up and understands that all of that should be very well insulated, and none of that air should be getting out, or none of that warm air from the attic should be coming in contact with either the metal or an air leak. Because you hit it right on the head. You're just going to have condensation like crazy this time of year.
All right. Thank you so much for your call, John. And we had a Denny call earlier, and he wasn't able to stay on the line, but he has an unusual suggestion for dealing with flooding. And his suggestion is, and he's done this in the past, that if you know a flood is coming, to fill the basement with clean water, because the clean water will keep the dirty water from coming in. What's your response to that idea?
Let Dennis handle this one. But I don't know. When we talked about that a little bit, I don't listen to me stumble on this one. I can see some reasoning there because of the hydraulic pressure, and you're using clean water so that when that water goes out, at least, you know, there's not a lot of residue. I don't know if I would do that. Maybe if you saw the water coming in, you'd add clean water to it. I don't know. That's a really good question, and I think I will let Dennis handle that. But I really don't know. That's something I'd like to hear somebody really be able to justify why you'd want to put water. And then just in case, well, what if the flood doesn't come?
Right, then you have a flooded basement anyway.
Yeah. And I don't know if your insurance company would cover it then either, because they'd say, well, yeah, especially if they heard about it, you mean you put the water in the basement? You know, that'd be something I'd ask. But it makes sense in some ways. You know, I can't say no, but sure. I'm sure glad he called.
Well, it's an interesting idea.
Yeah, it is an interesting idea, and I can see the reasoning behind it. You're creating the pressure so that the walls can't come in, the dirty water can't come in because the clean water supposedly would be holding it. It's similar. You know, there's actually nothing really different than what the other caller called about, is putting something in the sewer line to keep that from backing up because of the hydraulic pressure. I can tell that it would
go against every fiber in your soul to put a garden hose down in your basement and fill it up.
It would for me, yeah. Especially if somebody put it on YouTube or something. But, you know, that's a good question. I'd like to hear somebody else say they do that.
All right.
Well, I don't see it in the manual. That's the good one. But
You know what? Tom in Iowa City's on the line.
Oh, here we go.
Comment on this. Hello, Tom.
Hi. Regarding flooding your own basement.
Yes.
Several years ago, here in Iowa City, the low ground, they used to call it Skeeter Flats, has been flooded numerous times. And one of the times, I had a real good friend, and he flooded his basement because he was afraid the hydraulic pressure would blow the walls in.
Sure.
Which happened to me once when a water main broke. It blew a quarter of my basement wall in with that tremendous pressure.
Yeah.
So he did it, and his walls didn't blow in, and the water surrounded his house.
Yeah, I mean, that's where you can see the reasoning. I mean, it's excellent reasoning there.
Yeah, for him it did work. It was a real pain in the butt for him, you know, because you've got your furnace flooded and all that kind of stuff that needs to dry out before you can ever turn it back on again.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, if this guy, if people that do that are that creative, I bet they probably have quick disconnects on some of their furnace and water heater anyway.
That could be.
You know, and they get that out of there real fast. It's a good idea because there's no way that basement's going to cave in if he does that. So
right, because the pressure would be equalized.
Right,
on the inside and outside.
Yep.
Yeah, but it worked for him. So I don't know that everybody would want to go to that effort.
It sounds like you kind of wish you did, though.
Well, I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah.
It was a water main, and I was actually home eating supper, and some guy came to my front door and said, "Do you know there's water bubbling up in your basement or in your backyard?" And I looked out there, and it looked like little geysers.
Wow.
And I thought, oh, dear. And then I went down to the basement, and it was so powerful, but it was – and now I had concrete block. I didn't have the full concrete.
Sure.
And it was punching a hole through the mortar, and that water was so powerful, it, from 8 inches above, it would go almost all the way across the basement.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And then it started cracking, and then I heard this tremendous crash. I'd gotten the dogs and cats out of the house and my wife, and I thought the house was going to go down.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but you bet.
I actually had a waterbed on the first floor where the wall came in, but I had these huge beams that I'd put in just as a precautionary measure, and people that came and fixed the house said that's what kept the house up.
Wow.
Well, that's good.
Tom, thank you so much
for
your call. And before we go today, I want to ask, if you get the basement all cleaned up, you get that drywall taken out and everything taken care of, as you put it back together, what can you do to prevent damage from future floods to your basement?
Well, what I did, just in case that pump ever gives out again, is I took the drywall off the bottom a couple feet. And, you know, have you ever been to some of these restaurants where they have like galvanized roofing on the bottom? And, you know, so I went ahead and I put that in. And I, you know, went ahead and so I've got the galvanized metal on the bottom, trimmed it all out with wood that I can pull off if it ever gets wet again. And then I painted a lot of the wood, encapsulated it with mold and mildew paint.
All right.
But, you know, I am thinking ahead because I know I can keep the water out if my pump's working, but if electricity goes off and the generator doesn't work, you know, that'd be the next thing. And there you go. So I'm ready to go now. If that water comes up, I don't really care because the metal's not going to get ruined. I can just unscrew it off the wall, air it out, and put it back.
Right. Well, I was thinking about that just yesterday because, yeah, of course, nobody ever thought the floods in 93 were ever going to happen again. We were told that was a 500-year flood. My father-in-law said yesterday, I think I'm 1,300 years old in flood years. He lives in Ames. Well, so you don't think it's going to happen again, but...
No, you know, like in where I live, I swear I've had 300-500-year floods in the last couple, like you say, you know, last few years.
That's 15 years, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, sure. But, well, I guess at least we're learning, you know. But that's what I did, and that way I know I'm going to have very little cleanup.
Well,
so I'm ready.
All right. So there, when people are refinishing the basement, they should be thinking about that.
Yeah. I would never put tile or carpet down again, you know. So I went ahead and I just put some 12-inch tile down. I like the look of it. It's easy to clean up. I called down and asked some people at Home Depot. I said, okay, now which one's going to hold up better to water, the stick on or the vine or the glue down? And the guy said, you know, actually, he said, we've had better luck with the stick down. So, yeah, it was cheaper. So I went that route. And so I'm not really worried about it now.
All right. Jerry from Des Moines has a brief question about sump pumps, and then we'll be out of time. Jerry, what's your question?
Well, I like your opinion on the pros and cons of the two different styles of emergency backup sump pumps. I have a battery-operated one that has a trickle charger on it, but I read about the one that hooks into the water line and is water-powered.
Right.
Your thoughts on the advantages and disadvantages of each?
I've heard about them, but in my case, it wouldn't work for me if my power went out because I'm in the country and didn't have a generator because I run mine off of a well. But I have heard, and read some articles that they're very good for using in town.
All right, so
where you have pressure, you know, because if my power went out, I don't have pressure.
Okay, what about the battery operated?
The battery operated ones, there's a couple of them that'll last, you know, at least a couple days. So, you know, if nothing else, get that. But some of them are pretty small. That's the downside to them.
All right, better than nothing, though.
Better than nothing, you bet.
Jerry, thanks so much for your call. And Bill, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Jerry.
Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, joins us once a month on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at all times on iowapublicradio.org. And you can send us email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.